Penguin Random House Audio presents Singapore Sapphire by A.M. Stewart. Read for you by Saskia Malleveld. Prologue. Singapore, Friday, 4 March, 1910. Shorthand and typewriting. An English woman undertakes casual work as a stenographer and typist. From Monday to Friday, after 5:30 p.m. daily, on Saturday after 2 p.m., she guarantees rapid and careful work, together with absolute secrecy. Address Mrs. Gordon, Tanglin Post Office, 35. Sir Oswald Newbold picked up his pencil and circled the small advertisement on the second page of the Straits Times, folded the paper, and set it down beside his placemat. He crossed one leg over the other, and picking up his teacup, he surveyed his garden. The early morning mist rose out of a jungle beyond the boundary of this barely tamed corner of Singapore. The thick, humid air seemed alive with the bubuk call of the native birds and the screech of macaques. The smell of the hearty English breakfast of bacon and eggs that Nian set before him seemed curiously at odds with the tropical surroundings. As Sir Oswald ate, his eyes strayed once more to the Straits Times. He set down his fork and dabbed the egg yolk from his moustache. Folding his napkin, he pushed back his chair and stood up.
Nian, I have a letter to write. Be ready to take it into town for me later this morning.
Chapter 1. Singapore. Monday, 7 March, 1910. The day had not begun well for Harriet Gordon. A domestic upset in the kitchen had to be smoothed over before she even arrived at the school to find that the unreliable typewriter on her desk refused to work. The decision to retrieve her own little typewriter from the home of Sir Oswald Newbold had been where it all began. As the pony trap turned off Bukit Timah Road into the long drive that wound its way through the abandoned rubber trees and thickets of jungle up to Sir Oswald Newbold's home, the hairs on the back of her neck began to prickle. Not a monkey, a bird, or an insect could be heard in the ulu that surrounded the house, and a hush, as thick and impenetrable as the humidity of the late morning, settled around Harriet. The pony flattened his ears and slowed his jaunty pace as the low silhouette of the old plantation house came into view. Aziz clucked his tongue encouragingly, but Mr. Carrots came to a standstill, his ears pressed against his lowered head. The boy shifted in his seat, his gaze darting around the overgrown garden.
"Sorry, mem, we go no further, and I think we should not stay. They call this place Bukit Hantu. It is a bad place."
"Bukit Hantu? What does that mean?" Harriet asked. Her client had told her that he had named the property Mandalay in memory of his long connection with Burma. Aziz shook his head.
"There are evil spirits here."
Harriet smiled at the boy. "There are no such things as evil spirits, Aziz. You stay here with Carrots, and I'll just pop in and collect the typewriter." Aziz jumped from the trap and helped Harriet down. She narrowly avoided a puddle, a remnant of the morning rainstorms. Lifting her skirts to avoid the cloying red mud, she strode the last 50 yards to the steps of the old house. On her first visit to Mandalay, it had not seemed quite so run down. But now she could see the wood on the veranda supports was rotten and in need of painting. Green mildew stained the stone steps, and a single shutter somewhere around the side of the house flapped and banged, even though there seemed to be no wind. And again, the silence. No sound of servants chattering, no clanging of pots from the kitchen. Nothing. Her unease intensified as she set her foot on the lower step leading up the veranda. Glancing back, she forced a smile and waved at Aziz. The boy stood in the shade of a massive rain tree, holding Mr. Carrots's bridle. As she watched, the pony shook his head, almost sending the slender boy flying. The animal started to back away, and it took all Aziza's strength to hold him. Neither boy nor animal wanted to be here, and her unease began to grow. Bukit Hantu. Harriet's knowledge of Malay was still rudimentary. She knew Bukit meant hill, but Hantu? She would ask Julian when she got home. The wooden boards on the veranda creaked as she approached the door. Her client would not be expecting her until later in the day, but she needed the typewriter she had left with him. She knocked loudly on the frosted glass panel and stood back, expecting Sir Oswald's elderly Burmese servant to answer the door, as he had done the previous day. The seconds ticked past without any movement from within the house. She tried the door handle and found the door unlocked. Given the valuables she had seen in the house, she considered Sir Oswald's security a little lax. "Hello?" she called, her voice vanishing into the dark bowels of the house. "Sir Oswald? Are you at home?" "Damn it," she swore under her breath. She needed the typewriter. If no one was at home, perhaps she could retrieve her property and be gone, leaving a note of apology for her intrusion. Remembering the name of Sir Oswald's servant, she called out again. "Nian? Sir Oswald?" Only an echoing silence reverberated through the house to the open back door, visible from where she stood. "Just collect the typewriter and go. You can leave a note." She stepped over the threshold, and as her eyes adjusted to the gloom, she caught her breath. The main living room bore no resemblance to the cluttered room she had admired the day before. Then every space had been filled with oriental rugs, antique furniture, and Asian art. This morning, nothing remained in place. Furniture had been overturned, cushions torn apart, and valuable porcelain lay shattered on the rugs. A sensible woman would have turned on her heel. She glanced at the study door. It stood ajar, and drawn by an invisible force, she approached it, her breath held tightly in her throat. Something under her foot crunched, and she started, taking a step back. The splintered remains of two port glasses lay scattered across the floor, along with a small silver tray and a broken decanter. Her nose twitched as she caught the scent of the port and something else, sweet and sickly, at odds with the pervading odor of damp and dust. She skirted the broken port glasses and put her hand out to push the door open, but recoiled at the sight of dark smears on the chipped white paint. With a single extended finger, she pushed the study door. It opened on protesting hinges and she peered around it, her gaze seeking the familiar solidity of the sturdy black case of the Corona typewriter. It sat where she had left it, on the round table in the center of the room. But as her peripheral vision widened, she let out her breath in a gasp. Every book had been swept from the shelves, papers scattered across the floor, interspersed with copious amounts of broken china. And in the middle of the carnage, between the table and the big desk, Sir Oswald Newbold lay spread-eagled. Years of assisting her husband's medical practice and his work in the worst slums of India had inured her to death in its many forms, but nothing could have prepared her for the sight of the blood-stained corpse lying on the expensive oriental carpet. He stared up at the ceiling with sightless eyes, his face fixed in a grimace of horror, echoed only by the hideous grin of the devilish imp carved on the handle of the antique knife, the Dar, Sir Oswald had called it when he had shown it to her the previous day, that had been thrust into his neck. The scream stuck in Harriet's throat. Chapter 2. Runnels of sweat trickled down the back of Inspector Robert Curran's neck, softening the stiff, starched collar of his uniform. He took off his helmet and wiped his forehead with a handkerchief, before turning his attention to the old colonial plantation house. Time and the elements had not been kind to the once proud structure, that bore a crudely painted sign above the steps leading up to the veranda. Mandalay.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?